3, hit it.
Transform your life today. Welcome to Super Coach with Michael Neal.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you may be. Our topic for today is there life after dieting? And the numbers to call to talk about having what you want in any area of your life are 866-254-1579. It's toll free. 866-254-1579. And from outside the United States, you can reach the show on 760-918-4300. And as always, I like to begin by sort of just setting the table, talking a little bit about the topic. One of my favorite quotes from John F. Kennedy was that the great enemy of the truth is very often not the lie, deliberate, contrived, and dishonest, but the myth, persistent, persuasive, and unrealistic. And one of the just endemic mythologies in our culture is the idea that dieting is the way to, it's not just the way to lose weight, but it is the only way, or it is the best way, or it is even a legitimate effective way of losing weight. And the problem with that is it doesn't really seem to be true in terms of what people really want. Now, it is absolutely true. You can lose weight on a diet. There's, you know, I can't remember which comedian, but there was a comedian who used to talk about, hey, I quit smoking today, 15th time this month. You know, you can lose weight by not eating for a while. You can lose weight by taking in limited calories for a while. You can lose weight by limiting your carbohydrate intake, increasing your protein intake for a while. There are any number of ways that you can lose weight, but most people don't really just want to lose weight. They would actually like to be thin. They would like to have a healthy, fit body. And so one of the interesting things in all the research I've done over 20 years on diet, and I edited the best-selling book on weight loss in British history. It sold over 3 million copies, called I Can Make You Thin, and have worked with just innumerable people on it, is the one thing that we do know is that continually messing with your diet, trying to control your diet, has a kickback to it. They did these experiments, I think a few years ago, I may have even talked about on the show, where what they did was this guy named Ansel Keys discovered that reducing people's diet to a state of semi-starvation produced symptoms of irritability, loss of endurance, obsessive behavior around food, included but not limited to lying, hoarding, and stealing, and that in the three-month period after semi-starvation ended, this was all done during World War II, when people could again eat whatever they wanted, the obsession with food would continue. And so the people who'd been on the limited rations for the experiment, even when they were allowed to eat again, they were obsessed with food. And they stole, and they did all sorts of just things that you would think, oh my God, that's like an addict. And you couldn't do that experiment now. It was written about in 1950 in a treatise called The Biology of Human Starvation. And I mean, even if you could get the volunteers, which actually probably wouldn't be that hard, to purposely starve people, even college students, is considered cruel and inhumane these days. But here's the interesting thing for me. The semi-starvation rations in that study were 1,500 calories a day. Now, if you read diet books, that's actually more than a lot of diet books recommend. So what we've known for at least 60 years now is that putting yourself on a limited calorie diet, yes, it can absolutely work to lose weight in the short term, but it creates an unhealthy bounce back. And so when we talk about life after dieting, really what that means is, you know, how do you get your life back? How do you get back to a point where your relationship with food is not adversarial? And that's one of the things I want to talk about. And I just want to give you some of the things that you can get started with. And again, then we'll go to the phones. Numbers to call if you want to get in. We can talk about losing weight. We can talk about dieting, but we can talk about anything. Because really what this is about is you and about having what you want. So 866-254-1579 in the United States and Canada, or from outside the United States, 760-918-4300. First things to reject the food police. And once you kind of begin to realize that the reason you're so obsessed with food is actually because of the diet mentality, you know, because you've enrolled in voluntary starvation, aka dieting, you can begin to make your peace with food. So instead of fighting with forbidden foods, which naturally become more attractive than anything else on the menu, because, right, as soon as you can't have something, you want it. That's just human nature. You can start out by eating what you like when you like. And, you know, whenever I talk about this to a group, whenever I talk about this with a client, the first thing they say is, but I'll eat nothing but chocolate. And it's interesting because you'd think that would be true. And it in the first couple days, it might even be true. But over time, all the studies show that people wind up eating a fairly balanced diet. What's sometimes called the 90-10 balance, where 90% of the food that you eat will be pretty light, pretty nutritionally sound, and 10% will be play food. Second thing you can do, just to begin to make a difference right away, is honor your hunger and feel your fullness. So if there was a hunger scale, and it ran from 1, which was starving, to 10, which is like, oh, you better get a bucket. Yeah, how hungry are you right now? You know, 3, 4, 7, or 8, you know, which is like super full. Because if you practice tuning into your own hunger, it doesn't take long to begin to recognize signals from your stomach. Long before your stomach growls, right, or your brain gets fuzzy, which is when some people start noticing their hunger. And optimal eating tends to be around 3 or 4 on the scale, depending on how your scale goes, and finishes when you get to about a 6 or 7. Some people say you should eat until you feel full. I just kind of find here's how I think about it. If you didn't know anything about eating and you didn't have any issues where you were worried about food or you thought you were going to run out of food, and you actually, you know, just as far as you knew, food was something that, you know, when you had that hungry feeling that you ate, why would you ever eat if you weren't hungry? Right? If you were just, you know, in a natural state, you wouldn't eat if you weren't hungry. Why would you ever eat something you didn't want to eat? Why would you ever not actually like, why would you shove the food down? If you're eating when you're hungry and you're eating what you want, why wouldn't you like go slow enough to taste it and really enjoy it and eat it consciously? And why would you keep eating if you weren't hungry anymore? See, that's just natural. That's just what we would do. And it turns out that those same 4 sort of golden rules, as we talk about them in Paul's book in I Can Make You Thin, those 4 golden rules are actually the how naturally thin people eat. So you're going to reject the food police. You're going to honor your hunger. You're going to feel your fullness. But the other thing you can do is respect your body and honor your health. I remember as a kid, I don't know if he ever made a Wheaties box, but I remember this guy, Jim Fix. And he was the guy who really made jogging into the great American pastime in the 1970s. And he died, age 52, of a heart attack while jogging. Most people know about him. Not so many people remember that Jane Fonda, who created the aerobics craze in the 80s, she actually survived her exercise-induced heart attack in the middle of the aerobics craze, and having clearly learned from that near-death experience, introduced the world to low-impact aerobics, which came out about a year later. Now, I'm not putting these people down. I'm not saying they were wrong. There were other health issues. There were other things going on. And I can't tell you, oh, you got to go to this Get Fit expert, or you got to go to this one. But at some point, it's going to happen again. And what was interesting is one of the most comprehensive research studies into the health benefits of exercise was came to the conclusion. It was done by a New York Times reporter. I think her name was Gina Coletta. And she came to the conclusion that actually people who really exercise a lot don't exercise to live. They really do live to exercise. The health benefits decrease sharply after a certain point. But people who love to exercise just love to exercise. So if you love to exercise, go for it. You know, that's fantastic. Exercise. Moving your body is a good thing. But beyond sort of, you know, going for walks, eating when you're hungry, eating what you want, stopping when you're not hungry anymore, maybe paying attention to your food as it goes in, there's really not that much else you have to do. In other words, it's really like when people smoke. Sometimes they go, I want to become a non-smoker. Well, no one's going to become a non-eater. Okay, it's just not going to happen, at least not for very long. But what you absolutely can do is become a natural eater. And again, if you're just eating naturally, why would you ever eat if you weren't hungry? Why would you ever eat anything you didn't want? Why wouldn't you really enjoy your food, really eat consciously? And why would you keep eating if you weren't hungry anymore? So, little food for thought. Let's go to the phones. Let's go to Daniela in Santa Monica. Daniela, welcome to the show. What can I do for you today?
Hi, Michael.
Hello.
Well, I just I actually call you when I lived in New York, and I call you from there, and I told you I wanted to be a life coach, and you told me about your Super Coach Academy.
Yeah, which we began last weekend in New York.
Yeah, so unfortunately now I just moved to Santa Monica, so it's going to be harder to go to New York, which I would love to. But anyway, so I moved to Santa Monica and I found an NLP class, which I realized that that's what I wanted to do, because out of all the things that I've seen, I think NLP is the most practical and the one that I've seen like faster results. Mm-hmm. Anyway, so my question is, I took NLP practitioner, and then I took it again. I took it twice because that's the class I have. You know, they let you take it twice, you know, as many times as you want at the same level. Mm-hmm. Anyway, so there is the master practitioner coming, and I didn't sign up because I felt like I should practice what I've learned so far.
Yeah.
And, but again, like, I have a question, like, would that be, like, I know you do NLP too, so would that be something that I should finish before starting coaching, like having my master practitioner of NLP?
Let me give you my overall take, because there's not a right answer, Daniela, in the sense that not all master practitioner trainings are created equal. Not all practitioner trainings are created equal. And not everyone has picked up the same thing from their practitioner training. In fact, I've got a friend who created got over $1 million in grants and created a training program in his field of psychology. And they ran the program once because, you know, it was supposed to be the new thing. Because what they found is that the people who'd completed the curriculum for a year weren't necessarily any more qualified than some of the people who'd just done part of the curriculum. So that just having gone through it doesn't necessarily tell me or anyone else what you've got from it. What I would say from my experience of working, when I've worked with certainly thousands and probably tens of thousands of people just with NLP over the years, is if you start working with people, just, you know, start gently. So, you know, work with someone. Go. How many phobias have you knocked out? How many people don't have phobias because they've worked with you so far?
Yeah, well, none. I haven't really started.
Okay, so that would be the first thing. I would do is I would go and get rid of some phobias. You know, right. And I would, go, I mean, when we do our courses, we tell people, just go around the office till everyone's so sick of you saying, hey, you got a phobia I can get rid of? and get started that way and have fun with it. You don't have to charge for it. You don't have to make a big deal out of it. But just start doing it. If you've got the basics, if you understand the basics of rapport and all that, you know, you're not going to hurt anybody. So, you know, start playing with it. When you've done that, pick another technique. You know, maybe the six-step reframe and start seeing how many people's habits you can change. I remember going on set years ago. We filmed a series of what we called coffee cup coaching. And the director of the show was kind of, he didn't know what to make of me, and he wasn't, you know, he's very suspicious, and it just came up in conversation that he'd bitten his nails his whole life, and it was kind of a habit that annoyed him. And I said, oh, would you like to stop? And he was like, well, no, it's not gonna, I mean, you can't just stop. He went through this whole thing, and I literally just ran him through a six-step reframe. Just basically, for those people listening going, what on earth are they talking about? The six-step reframe is just very simply asking whatever part of you is responsible for the behavior to find some other way of meeting the positive intention. So most of the things that we think of as bad habits, like biting nails or smoking or picking your nose or whatever it is, there's a positive intention behind that. And the positive intention is usually some sort of a settling, a self-soothing mechanism, something to help you relax, something to help you feel better. Mm-hmm. And so you ask the person's unconscious mind to find other ways to help them feel better that don't have the negative consequences of whatever the habit was. Mm-hmm. You know, sometimes we do this with people who blush, and, you know, the blushing, it's serving a purpose, but there are other ways that the body can serve that purpose without the blush response. And you do a quick check with the person to make sure that all of them is comfortable trying out the new behaviors, and then it looks like magic, but really it just goes away. Have you had experience of having that either on the course or with yourself,
yes,
where that kind of change,
yes,
happened?
Yes. Yeah.
So again, you know, so I spent less than 5 minutes with the director. The next day he came in and he said, "What did you do to me?" And he thought I was a witch. Now, this is the thing. So go play with that for a week. Just to see how many people you can help them get rid of a habit they've been trying to get rid of for years. And within a very short space of time, you'll get to a point where you get it. The people who I've seen who've really taken their NLP and really excelled are the people who put it into practice straight away. So I can't tell you, do your master practitioner, wait to do your master practitioner, anything like that. But what I can tell you is go out and be of use to people, and that will tell you what to do next.
Awesome. And I really appreciate your answer because, your advice, because I think I'm at that point that I'm like, I just have to go and do it, because if I wait through the other course and then I think like I should know that also very well before I start practicing and all that, I'm just going to postpone me starting and start having confidence in what I'm doing and what I can do so far.
And that's the thing is when the reason you want to do the next training is because you're really, really good at what you've done with the first training, not because you're afraid that you don't know enough yet, then that might be time to do it.
Great. Thank you so much. And the last thing is one thing that you might recommend for me to just start getting, I mean, I guess you already answered, like just to go out and start practicing, but just to have like confidence that I could be good at this.
Well, you know, confidence is good, and that will certainly help reassure the person you're talking with. but confidence, you know, in a way, confidence is only a part of it. Just practice. Have you taken care of a phobia for yourself?
Mm-hmm.
You know, or a fear. You know, something that you were scared of that you're not scared of now.
Yes.
Okay, so that's a start. So you might just have a conversation with somebody. You know, again, don't set yourself up as a therapist. Don't say, I can do this and you need to pay me this. Just explain, you know, our brains are interesting. And one of the interesting things about our brains is that they are learning machines. We are learning monsters. And people can learn one time. Something happens one time and they've learned it for life. And a phobia is an example of that. It's a one-time learning. Something happens once and it's so scary to us that we never go there again. And it's not like you ever forget. People go to school and they worry they're going to forget how to learn. They have to take massive notes. Oh, well, how am I going to remember my chemistry? How am I going to remember which Shakespeare play this is from? Nobody ever forgets to be scared when they get on an elevator if they've got an elevator phobia. Nobody ever is petting a spider and then goes, oh no, I forgot, I'm scared of these guys. Okay? It's hardwired in our system. But what's interesting about phobias, one of the things that makes phobias a really interesting thing, is that there is a structure to them. The way that we scare ourselves with a phobia is consistent. And it's like watching a movie. Like I remember as a kid, I saw the... God, which movie was King Kong? And it was a restored edition of the original King Kong, the big black and white one from the 30s. And there was this scene with these giant spiders. I was terrified. I was probably 8 years old, and it was the scariest thing I'd ever seen, and I was terrified of spiders. And then when I was older, I had one of those, it was sort of like an iPhone-size TVs, you know, portable TV. And I remember that movie came back on. And it had really tinny sound. It had one really crappy speaker. And I sort of was like watching it, but I was going to put it down when it got to the spider bit. And suddenly I noticed, because on that tiny little screen, those spiders were tiny. And they were so clearly animatronic, you know, like clay. It was like watching Mr. Bill, you know, oh no, we're the evil spiders and we're going to get you. Oh no. and I just looked at it and it was just like, that was what scared me. Well, it's the same thing inside our heads. You know, you're not scared of what you're seeing out there. You're scared of the movie that you're running in your head. And so when you change the movie in your head, you don't have the same response anymore. And so you might be talking to somebody about all that and say, do you want to try it? And they'll go, sure. Okay, well, what's something you're scared of? And then you can talk them through it. So you don't have to do it as a formal, I will now cure your phobia.
Okay,
Just play.
Thank you. And I got to say, you really inspire me to want to be a life coach, because you definitely are a magician of words. You make magic with words. And I want to do that.
Well, thank you very much. And I think I can tell you from my experience, it's one of the most wonderful things I've found to do with my time here on Earth.
Awesome.
Thank you, Daniela.
Thank you so much. Have a great
okay.
day.
Okay. You too. You know, this is what is fun. For those of you who don't know NLP, it's just fascinating to me what goes on inside our heads. It's, you know, when you really look, like, how is it that you can go to a movie? I remember going to, what was the movie? Black and white, handheld cameras, Blair Witch Project. And I was sitting there thinking, oh my God, this is the worst movie I have ever seen in my life. And I was there with my wife, and I was literally like, you know, tapping my feet, checking my watch. And the lights came up at the end, and I turned to commiserate with Nina, and the look of terror and exhaustion on her face shocked me. She was absolutely terrified. She said, that was the most brilliant movie I've ever seen. Well, how is that possible, right? How is it possible that two people can experience something in two such completely different ways? That's one of the things that with NLP, you know, we go into and we explore is, well, literally, we answer that question. Well, because one person makes this kind of representation of it in their mind, and the other person makes that kind of representation. And one person filters it through this, and another person filters it through that. And the result is two completely different experiences. Let's go back to the phones. Let's go to Sarah in Bellevue. Sarah, welcome to the show. What can I do for you today?
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
You're welcome.
I just listened to your discussion about helping somebody quit smoking.
Mm-hmm.
And I really have tried everything, and I just can't seem to give it up. As much as I know that I want to, I know the life on the other side of it. So I was wondering if you could help me with that.
So when you say you want to, I'm not like deliberately going, oh, really? But I've talked to a lot of smokers over the years.
Okay.
And it's the minority that when I talk to them really 100% know that they want to quit.
Yeah.
Some people think they should quit. They ought to quit. They have to quit. It's very few that really want to. So I just want to check that first.
Well, I know I use it as a crutch. I work as an intuitive, actually, and I know that probably in my earlier years, it was a grounding mechanism that was, you know, the one that I could find. I think that I actually do want to quit, but
okay.
There's a fear attached to if I do, I can't seem to nail down.
Okay, great. So here's a quick way that might help you kind of get to that fear thought, whatever it winds up being, which is, mm-hmm. What are you concerned might happen if you quit?
I don't know.
Or let me put it this way. What are you concerned might happen if you weren't allowed to have a cigarette anymore? Like I seem to be doing movies, but if you were like in A Clockwork Orange, if you were conditioned to just vomit every time you picked up a cigarette,
yeah.
You know, is there anything your concern might happen if you were physically unable to smoke anymore?
I don't think I would feel like I would be grounded. It's a strange thing.
Well, that's not strange at all. So then for you, at least part of the positive intention of smoking is to ground you.
Yeah. And fine.
Okay.
I've at least identified that that's a place when I do go have a cigarette, it's just I'm by myself, you know, so mm-hmm. It's very solitary. It's not a group thing.
Okay, so great. So you get your me time.
Yeah.
And you get some grounding.
Yeah.
And you want to continue to have me time and grounding, right?
Right. I do meditate. And
okay, so here's what I want you to do, Sarah. We're coming up on a break. Can you hang out with me over the break?
Sure.
Okay, so we're going to keep talking after the break. What I want you to do over the break is I just want you to tune in to whatever that part of you is that smokes. And I want you to just kind of check out what else so it wants for you. It wants to ground you. It wants to kind of make sure you have me time. Find out what else there is. We'll talk about more of that after the break, and we'll talk more with you. You can get in on the phone lines after the break. Bye-bye for now.
4300.
1, 2, 3, hit it!
Real strategies for real change. This is Supercoach with Michael Neal.
We are back, and we're talking about weight, and we're talking about smoking, and we're just talking about all the good stuff. So let's go back to smoking. Let's go to back to Sarah. Sarah, are you still with us?
Yes, I am.
Okay, anything else came up when you tuned in? Oh, I thought it might.
A lot came
up. I love those well-timed commercial breaks.
Well, yeah, thank you. Well, so seeing as what I do is working with people as an intuitive, I know that my sensitivity level is high, and when I have various sessions, I ultimately, you know, merge with their information, and sometimes that makes me really tired. And so, one component would be helping me bring my energy back up. I might be doing it to release the information. But I think it's really holding me back from fully stepping into this. There's probably a fear for me if I really am completely present with this gift that I have. I think I hold a fear there. Another is that it is in our family history, going back many, many generations. So I thought it's also generational. I might be holding my family, but your question at first, am I wanting to give it up? I absolutely am. I feel
okay,
like I
so,
really
no, I
want to
hear
be
that.
Done with this.
I really hear that. So here, let me assist you in making that easier. Because if you want to know how to quit smoking, look, it's really easy.
Okay.
Don't buy a pack of cigarettes. And if you get a pack of cigarettes, don't open it. And if it's open, don't take one out. And if there's one out, don't stick it in your mouth. And if there's one in your mouth, don't light it. And if it's lit, don't inhale. And if you inhale, exhale. And if it's still in your mouth, take it out of your mouth. Do you know what I mean? There's no rocket science to that part of it.
Right.
So you already know how to do that.
Right.
So what I'm going to be talking about with you is just stuff to make it easier to do what you already know to do.
Great.
And that won't make you a non-smoker. That will make you someone who used to smoke.
Okay.
Because that's, you know, that's just how it is. Now, but let's just take a look at your own wisdom here. Because if somebody came up to you and said, hey, I've got a proposition for you. I'm going to teach you how to not be grounded, have less me time, lower your energy, stay stuck in other people's drama and information when you do readings, be unsafe, feel disconnected from your family and your heritage. When shall we begin? And by the way, you've got to pay me. I mean, well, you're going to tell them to go away.
You're brilliant.
And not that politely. So, you know, again, there is a wisdom here. And here's the thing. I bet you anything that at some level, whether you know it consciously right now or not, you know that there is at least one other way that you could ground yourself, have time for yourself, lift your energy, release the information, keep protected and feel connected to your family. Is there not?
Yes. Yes.
And if there's one way, would it follow that there's probably at least two ways?
Yes.
And if there's two ways, there's probably three ways, right?
Right.
And if there's three ways, there's probably even more. Yes?
Yep.
So would it be okay, and just tune in to yourself, would it be okay with you if over the next few weeks you got to be surprised and delighted at all the new ways that you found yourself, sometimes spontaneously, sometimes through thinking about it, grounding yourself, taking time for yourself, lifting your energy, letting go of other people's crap, doing what you need to do to protect yourself, and staying with that knowing that you really are a part of your family and generational, and that, you know, that's not what makes you a part of them, is that you carry the same stick.
Yeah. Yes, it would.
Would that be okay with you?
Yes, that sounds easy and gentle.
And that really is easy and gentle. And for some people listening, they might go, well, that's too easy and too gentle. It's got to be hard. Look, for 48 hours, there will be nicotine in your system. And for 48 hours, there is an actual physiological thing that's going to, you know, translate into this urge to get more nicotine into the system. And it's to do with serotonin release. I don't have time to go into it all now, yeah. But dopamine release and all that kind of stuff. But after the 48 hours, it's all psychology.
Oh, okay.
And the easiest thing is to just enjoy finding these other ways, enjoy noticing yourself, ground and take time for yourself and lifting your energy and releasing and connecting. And like I say, don't buy it. If you buy it, don't open it.
Right.
If it's open, don't put it in your mouth. If it's in your mouth, take it out. And so on down the line.
Right. You know, for me, it's not about gaining weight, and it's not about it. I want to help, but I'm hurting myself in helping.
Yeah.
You know,
and you don't need to do it that way anymore.
Yeah.
And please call back to the show. Let me know how it goes.
Okay. Michael,
right,
you
Sarah.
Said earlier there was a mantra that you said to yourself, or when you were doing the when you were speaking to the last caller about releasing the man who was biting his fingernails. What was that? That
did I say a mantra?
Wow,
I haven't even heard the word mantra. There was some movie, I think, where Jeff Goldblum,
God.
I think it was in Annie Hall, and Jeff Goldblum, it was his first line as an actor, and it cuts to him, and he's at this party, and he calls his TM instructor and says, I can't remember my mantra.
Okay. What are the words, then? The words you use that I can just, I'm painting a room right now, that I can say to myself and in asking myself to release this. Just as an aid. Well, you were talking to the...
Okay, I mean, look, I may well have been, sir. I it's not like I listen to what I say. No, I apologize. I actually don't know what we're... I probably knew what I meant at the time. What I would say in yeah. terms of if you're looking for sort of words of encouragement affirmation.
Affirmations for reprogramming your brain.
You know, the one that comes to mind,
yep.
And you know, it's just the one that's coming to mind as we're talking is, you know, who's bigger, me or the leaf?
Oh, nice. Okay. Me or the leaf. I'm writing it down.
I just have this great image now of you holding a cigarette out of your mouth and the lighter, and you're like threatening, and you're going, you know, if you don't calm down, the leaf gets it.
I will think about that. Thank you, Michael.
All right, Sarah. Thank you.
All right.
Bye.
Bye.
God, was I really talking about mantras? That fascinates me. All right, let's go to the next call. Let's go to Jane in Long Island. Jane, welcome to the show. What can I do for you today?
Yes. Hi. How are you doing today?
I'm very well, thank you.
Oh, that's good. The reason why I'm calling is because I'm ready to drop the weight that I seem to have accumulated over the last couple of years.
Mm-hmm.
I've never had this situation before, and I know that I had gathered up the weight because I didn't feel safe. It's time for me to take it off, definitely.
Okay.
So I need to know, I don't know how to undo those thoughts. I tell myself that I'm thin, and I go through all those thoughts, but for whatever reason, I just can't take it off. So I mustn't be tapping in.
Let's talk a little bit about this, because this is, you know, have you noticed you're not the only person in the world that struggles with this?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I never had this before.
Yeah. Well, it's an interesting thing because, you know, we live in a culture where there's so many mixed messages about food. Food is love. I was talking to, I had a really funny conversation actually with my middle daughter, Clara, yesterday. And she said, you know what grandma told me? And I said, no, what? And she said, Grandma told me that food passes the time.
Mm.
And I thought, wow. You know, that's such a well-meaning, loving thing for Grandma to have said when she loaded my daughter's backpack up with snacks. But that's part of the culture, right? That's the culture you're in. The fact is the sanity of... Well, you know, if you were sane about it, you'd just eat when you were hungry and you wouldn't eat when you weren't hungry and you'd eat what you actually wanted and you'd eat slowly enough that you could really enjoy the food. That it's so hard to maintain that sanity when there's so many messages all around that you know, that get in the way. Now, there are absolutely things that help, things that make a difference. One of the things that always stays in my mind is people always wonder, well, how do I know when to eat? And there really is one foolproof way. There's one foolproof question you can ask. I remember seeing a cartoon, and I wish I could remember the name of the book because I'd really like to credit the author, but I just, the cartoon made me laugh. And it was two people, and one of them was, and it was the thought bubbles above their head. Mm-hmm. And one of them, the thought bubble above their head was totally full, and it was filled with things like, oh, no, I'm trying to maintain. I wonder how many calories this is. I'm on a 1,750 calories, and I'm not quite sure. And now, is it, is it 40, 30, 30? What's my carb protein balance supposed to be? And, oh, God, what time is it? Is it the right time? And it goes on. I mean, it's almost like a page of internal dialogue. And then there's somebody else next to them, and their thought bubble just has three words in it. And the three words are, am I hungry?
Yeah, that doesn't seem to be the problem. I mean, sometimes I'll eat things, and I'm not, like, starving or anything. I always have eaten very healthy. Like today, I brought for a snack, I brought celery. Not too exciting. I happen to like celery.
Okay, so here's the thing. Now, understand, this is where I do all my disclaimers. I am not a doctor. I am not a trained dietary physician. What I am is somebody who's got a lot of experience of being of assistance to a lot of people who've wanted to lose weight. Mm-hmm. So everything I say is just in that context.
Okay.
My experience is that when people get too caught up in trying to eat the right things,
mm-hmm.
they are not in tune with their body. And the way that I know to find your natural weight, now your natural weight may not be railed then. Okay. Mm-hmm. It probably isn't, but I will pretty much guarantee you from the little bit we've talked, it will be, you'll like the way you look, you'll like the way that you feel.
Mm-hmm.
And the way that people get back to and maintain their natural weight is by listening to their body. Now, we don't do that. We're trained not to do that. We're trained to eat at mealtimes and not snack between. We're trained to eat everything on our plate. We're trained to eat to pass the time. We're trained to eat because we're feeling a little bit upset and it might help calm our nerves. We're trained to eat for all these reasons and to eat all these things that have nothing to do with what our body is telling us it wants and needs.
Mm.
My experience is, if you will take the time to tune into your body will, after a time, there'll be an adjustment period. I usually tell people, expect for the first like 10 days it to be a little weird.
Mm-hmm.
You know, to start craving foods that you wouldn't normally eat and, you know, eating things that you haven't eaten and probably even overeating them because, you know, it's like part of you is checking, you know, ooh, do they mean it? Am I really allowed to eat this or is it just a trick? It's probably just a trick. So I'll just shove in all the chocolate now just in case it turns out to have been a trick. If you get this sounding familiar, right?
You know, I think it's funny.
if you get past that bit, your body will guide you. And, you know, it may be 8:30 and you notice, hey, you know what? I'm hungry. And you have four bites of something. And you go, you know what? I'm not hungry anymore. And you stop.
Mm-hmm.
And then at 11, it happens again. And then it doesn't happen again until 4.
Right.
And then it happens again at 9.
Right.
And it's fine, but you're eating what you actually want.
Mm-hmm.
You're eating when you're hungry. You're stopping when you're not hungry anymore, mm-hmm. even if that's after only 3 or 4 bites. And you're eating consciously. Mm-hmm. And there's actually a thing about digestion that this is I've read studies about this. I don't know how scientifically backed this is, but it made sense to me intuitively as well, that if you smell your food before eating it, that the reason that the nose is biologically above the mouth
mm-hmm.
is partly to stop you from sticking anything that's off into your mouth
mm.
because you'll smell it. But it's partly because there are different digestive enzymes for different foods. And if you take the time to smell the food before it goes in the mouth, the smelling of the food actually triggers the appropriate digestive enzymes for that particular food.
Oh, cool.
And so
very
when you bring
cool.
that level of consciousness to it, it changes the whole process. Now, can I give you one more exercise to play with?
Sure.
Okay. I'm gonna actually read you this because this is something I wrote a little while back. In an age where airbrushing out love handles is no harder than putting Forrest Gump in the White House, it can be difficult to know what your optimal body shape and size really is. To put it another way, you may never have the body of Elle Macpherson, but then again, neither will she. So here's an exercise, okay? Here's an exercise that you can, that's just going to help you get in touch with your own natural body.
Okay.
Okay? Each day, spend at least 1 minute looking at yourself in the mirror. Now, that might sound really easy, or that might sound terrifying.
Mm-hmm.
And in an ideal world, you do it naked. But if that's horrific to you, then you wear a muumuu. Just take a minute to really be with yourself in the mirror. And notice while you're doing that what thoughts come up, because thoughts will come up. And those thoughts might be, you know, hey, not bad for 45 or whatever it is. Or, mm-hmm. God, I hate my thighs. I am the ugliest mm-hmm. thing God ever created. Or it doesn't matter. You're not trying to control them.
Mm-hmm.
Just notice them come up. And when they come up, they come up. They're just thoughts. They're just like little bubbles, balloons. Let them come up. And stick with that exercise until you can pretty consistently look at your body in the mirror for a full minute without crying, without wincing, without, you know, feeling the need
without
to kind
horrified.
Of tell yourself how wrong you are and oh, now I'm paying for it. All the crap that comes up in
right.
all our heads when we do that. It's just giving it space, and that might be you do it 3 days, it might be you do it 3 months. I don't know.
Okay.
But there will come a time where you can just look at yourself and you can just see, oh, there's a body there. When you're at that point,
mm-hmm.
start sending loving energy to the person in the mirror.
Okay.
And that's just a way of letting them know that your love for them is not dependent on their weight.
I see. Okay.
Because, you know, one of the things that happens again and again when people try to lose weight is at some level they try and use conditional love to blackmail themselves into losing weight. It's like, yeah, I'll love you when you're thin again.
Mm.
I'll approve of you again when you're thin again. I'll be nice to you when you're thin again. And again, it's done for the best of, it's done so well-meaning.
Sure.
But the thing about conditional love is it's conditional love.
Mm-hmm.
And conditional love doesn't satisfy anything in anyone.
Okay. Because, you know? I was going through, I had a death. My mom had actually passed away, and I felt unsafe with some situations with her passing, and so I know that that's why I put the weight on. And I'm thinking, okay, it's been 3.5 years. Like, okay, where am I at now? Because I could pinpoint when I started to put the weight on. Because I always had 10 pounds. No big deal.
Do this for a minute, Jane. Just think yourself thin for a minute.
Okay.
Okay. Imagine it's 6 months from now, whatever it would
okay.
be.
Okay. Okay.
And just imagine going around through your day. Being
okay.
thin, not gaunt,
right?
You know,
right. No,
thin.
I don't want that.
And just notice if anything comes up that's any particular discomfort or any particular fear or concern.
Okay.
And does anything come up, or does that seem sort of like, well, it's fine?
No, it's fine. It's like if I think myself thin, it's like I feel like I could move more freely. My clothes fit better. I feel better about myself. It just makes me uncomfortable having this excess weight on.
Yeah. Well, great.
You know.
Great. Then
forget
then,
the mirror
then
thing.
I will definitely do that.
I will definitely do that, but my thoughts that go through my head are not positive, that's for sure.
No, but so this is the thing is it's not about trying to convince yourself
right.
that it's all okay. It's just about opening up a space for all the crap to flow out.
Mm. That's great. That's great.
And you know, my experience is that you'll find that to be a really, 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 once you get through the first couple days of, oh God,
sure.
this is horrible. What was that guy's name? I must get a voodoo doll made of him and stick pins in it. Once you get past that phase, it's really, really lovely. Okay.
Stick pins in it. I love it.
Thank you very much, Jane.
You are very welcome, Michael. Bye-bye.
All right. Bye. Do I go on a rant about positivity? I won't go on a big rant about positivity. of course, we feel better when positive thoughts come through than when we fixate on negative thoughts. Do we manifest more things and vibrate at a higher rate like it talks about in The Secret? It seems to be so. But what actually happens when most people try to be positive is they create war on the inside of their head, and they create conflict. And so the vibrational energy that's actually being created in there is one of conflict, is one of discomfort, is one of unhappiness with oneself. My just consistent experience from the very beginning of exploring this stuff has been that acceptance of whatever's going on will take you so much further than control. Control is a really limited game because, first off, it's really hard. Okay, and if you've ever tried to just think positive, you know that. But second off, the second you stop controlling, all hell breaks loose in your head, right? All those negative thoughts you've been blocking out because I'm positive, 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 positive. All of that stuff starts coming up and you feel like a failure. Well, what kind of vibrational energy is that? That's not what you set out to do this in the first place for. If you want to create this wonderful internal environment, which, look, whether or not you got kind of, you get into the whole law of attraction thing, it just feels better, if nothing else, to have an internal environment of peace. And you cannot be at war with food. You cannot be at war with smoking or any other habit. You cannot be at war with your own negative thoughts and feelings. You cannot be at war with your body and experience peace. That's not rocket science. That's common sense. And peace comes through acceptance. And one of the easiest ways to get there, see, because acceptance sounds like an activity, right? Acceptance sounds like something to do. Okay, right. So I'm listening to Michael. Right. So, okay, I got it. What I must do, take my notes, super coach. Right. I've got my notes from Colette before that. Got my notes lined up for the next show. But okay, here's my notes from Michael is work on acceptance. Practice acceptance. Okay, actually, acceptance is what's there when you're not disapproving of yourself. Disapproval, that takes energy. Acceptance is just, well, it's just what is. You don't have to do anything to do it. It's just what's there when you stop disapproving of yourself. Right. New note to self. Activity. Must stop disapproving of myself. Must practice not disapproving of myself. It's like practicing not stepping on the accelerator in a car. You don't really need to practice it, though you will from time to time forget and step on the accelerator anyways. But all you have to do when you do that is stop it. Take your foot off the accelerator. Take the cigarette out of your mouth. Take the Twinkie down. Put the Twinkie down, unless you're hungry and you really fancy a Twinkie, in which case, enjoy the Twinkie. Put the horrible thoughts about you down. Okay, you don't have to not think them. Just notice them. Let them come up. Let them go out. Because that's what will happen unless you step in there and try and get all macho and ego and I'm going to control my thoughts and look at how well I'm controlling my thoughts and I am the best thought controller in the whole wide world. That's my new affirmation. I'm the best thought controller in the whole wide world. And you get tighter and tighter and more conflicted and it's just tiring. It's just tiring. Relax. You don't have to work so hard. It doesn't have to be that hard. It can be easy. It can be effortless. It can be fun. Worst case, you have a really lovely experience of being alive and you feel good in your body. Best case, you have a really lovely experience of being alive, you feel good in your body, and you're thin. That's about all we got time for today. Thanks to Steve and Joe in the studio for keeping us on air. We're going to be back with a brand new show next week. You can learn more about me and what I do at geniuscatalyst.com. That's www.geniuscatalyst.com. Till next time, have fun, learn heaps, and I'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye for now.